Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet David Adez. David Adez is an Australian poet who moved to Pittsburgh in 2011. He has been involved with South Australia's Friendly Street Poets since 1979. His collection, entitled Mapping the World, was commended for the Ann Elder Award in 2008. His poetry has been published in many Australian and, more recently, American journals and literary magazines. One of his poems was anthologized in Australian Love Poems 2013. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Jan. Yourself?
Good. I'm good. And I'm really happy to have you on. We've been talking about it for a little while now.
Yes.
So now we're doing it. So you're going to start off with some poems from your book, Mapping the World.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Okay. Between the words. I thought to unlock mysteries. Words on a page, archaeological tools, excavating, brushing, sifting. I thought the naming of things would pin them down, like carbon dating, fixing on a point in time. That I could sidle up silently upon truth, ambush it within parentheses by a simple act of revelation. I followed that path to its end, turned back, returned many times, unearthing only fragments of the whole. Language bleeds, definitions are mock borders. Meaning bypasses manned checkpoints, slips unseen between the lines. So many hoarse shouts echo between the words. So many silences, so many unspoken truths. Intruder. Something is lurking between thought and thought, between intuition and instinct, in the faint whiff of perfume, unidentifiable but suggestive, and ripples in dust motes and the weight of absence in this room. Someone tilting at the universe was here, though there is no warm coffee cup or telltale cigarette smoke, no lipstick on the mirror or hurried handwritten note, no reason for this sudden skin crawl and sweaty palms, for the imprint of a memory to take shape and guilt to blaze again like a candle that will not be extinguished, throwing unwanted light upon the dark. An afternoon in Bombay. Here, the skill is patience, like that acquired in these bustling Indian cities where order is not imposed, where time is not a matter of consulting a watch, and the streets are clothed with beggars and vendors wise in the ways of waiting. Outside the window, children are flying kites from rooftops, rudimentary things weaving and fluttering in the hot air. A grey haze masks the afternoon sun. Life, in its myriad manifestations, pulses strongly. The daily enactment of infinite stories, told and untold, continues, whilst by the window, that other story between the pages waits sedately for an audience. Nightfall, Dalat, Vietnam. Dusk slides down the gullet, is devoured whole by the mouth of transience, does not exist. The day, requited, is clasped by ebony fingers, surrenders smooth to waiting dark. Light strings, the shift and flicker of lanterns hooked beneath tarpaulins by street stalls, wink on, bead the marketplace, configure the steps rising to the streets above. People eat from deep bowls. Steam rises. Mollusks boil in huge pots, glow wetly. Crowds eddy and swirl past clusters of bicycles and motorbikes around wooden benches. Movement slips in and out of shadow. A shape, thick-set, disengages from milling faces, approaches. Flick-blade knife, casual, ordinary as breath, unsnaps in hand, waves quicksilver in a mock lunge, disappears. A hint of smile flashes in half light. Seconds later, a metal tip presses against my belly, pauses, measures the long night of its potential, the weight of a little weight and a flick of wrist, that easy turn back into shadow and crowd. All in a few quick moments, wordless, before surprise registers on my face, or I have taken one step back, exactly like death.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet David Adez. He's reading from his new book entitled Mapping the World. One thing I wanted to ask you, David, is about the imagery in your work. It seems to be a lot of images and visual sensibility in your work. I know that you have some poems that you've written from paintings. So I'm wondering, how important is the visual in your work, in the writing process or otherwise?
Well, it's part of the sensory tradition, I guess. Visual, perhaps more so than smell and some of the other sensations, although I like to think that I can write with those in mind too. But this book is loosely based on some years of travels that I did, and so the visual was a very strong, impactful part of that. Part of that process and part of my coming to try and understand what it was that I was seeing and experiencing. I think some poems turn more inwardly and I talk a lot, I think, about relationships and the human element. And in those poems, perhaps the visual isn't quite so much at the forefront.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the idea of location is so primary in the book, and it's called Mapping the World, and you're saying you traveled a lot, and that's why we keep hearing things like path, journey, return, going.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about your travels in relation to your writing? Were you writing as you were traveling? Did you set out to write a book as you were traveling?
No, not at all. In fact, when I started, I was in my mid-20s, and I'd flirted with the idea of poetry, but I didn't want to call myself a poet, and I didn't really want to be a poet. I wanted to be a poet in the theory, in the abstract, but I didn't want to ruin the dream of being a poet by actually attempting it and failing. So I kind of postponed the exercise for a while. When I started traveling, I was keeping a journal, and the journal initially was, you know, I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning, blah, blah, blah. And after a little while, I started focusing more on interior landscapes and what was going on for me by what I was seeing. So, I mean, it is a bit of a cliche that life's a journey and all the rest of it, but what sort of I felt very strongly as I was travelling was that there was an exterior journey and there was an interior journey, and both of them were proceeding apace. I didn't set out to write, many of these poems were written after I finished travelling. I didn't set out to write a book about the travels per se. In fact, the book chronicles different worlds and different journeys, interior landscapes, landscapes of the heart, physical landscapes, as you've noticed, and landscapes of friendships as well.
Okay. Could you read some more?
Sure. Hard Rin, Koh Phangan, Thailand. The sea is a placid blue bowl, rimmed by white beaches and coconut palms. I am a goldfish, eyes peering at the world, uncomprehending. I rattle and throw the bones. When I lean over to decipher their meaning, they speak in a language I do not know. The space I occupy follows me everywhere, like a faithful dog. The distances I have harvested prowl in my shadow. A stranger walks upon the sand, wearing my sarong. I catch myself in the act of becoming someone else. Amphitheatre in Pamukkale. The builders here must have been poets. Look how delicately they wrought the amphitheatre to the hill, a wedding couple still lying in each other's arms, still locked in the perfect harmony of their wedding dance above the thermal pools where Cleopatra bathed. The bride has aged. Her sagging body speaks of a clinging love, while the earth seeps through the wings on either side of the stage, slowly consummating, taking possession. Now the poets are long dead, and civilizations have fallen like stones into the earth. The amphitheater lies deserted in afternoon sun, except for you and I, hushed and still beneath the weight of stones, a pair of warbling birds, the drone of summer flies, and two young boys screaming to each other. Torn postcards lie scattered across the stage, too listless even to flutter. The smell of defecation clings to the air. Everywhere lie toppled columns, configurations of fallen stone speaking to the eye in an ancient language, stone basted in heat. And there are voices in the stone, still ringing their past performances. There are voices in the stone, voices in the stone, empty now in the twilight, except for the ghosts of an audience in the higher rows, inclining forward, watching the spectacle on the stage and that beyond, in the shimmering expanse of valley and mountain, through the passing of the ages. Marble in your hands, becoming your voice. You have gathered strength in these past years. As strong as marble, you have become, the softness of your smile belying the hardness of your intent. You are starting to speak through stone now, the stone flowing through your hands flowing into the stone. They say you find little use for words, that you are becoming more mute than that which you fashion. You are becoming that which you create, marble in your hands, becoming your voice. Measuring the man. I tried to measure the man, not by any scientific method, not by a tailor's tape measuring height or girth or the spread and gentle slope of shoulders, not by the law of physics calculating mass or volume or the properties of a singularity or the distances between words, not by the principles of mathematics, placing numerical values on days or friendships, or gauging the reach of poems, but by the weight of his presence in the same room, or the knowledge of his presence elsewhere, in the paddock, at dawn, with horses nearby perhaps, or dancing a crazed impromptu dance with kitchen implements in each hand, a mock stern look on his face, and by the corresponding weight of his absence, in the end, immeasurable.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet David Adez, reading from his book, Mapping the World. Seems to me there's a lot of ghosts in your work, and I'm not just thinking of the one poem you just read that names ghosts, but the a sense of the otherworldly going on, and I don't know if that's the interior landscape you were referring to, you know, connecting voice and land, but I keep feeling it, you know, like something else is lingering or is underground, I mean, in a really good way. Is that something you're trying to create in your work or something that you can speak to?
One of the things I love about poetry is that people keep seeing things in it that I don't necessarily see in it. So I don't think that I set out with any conscious intent to manifest ghosts in my work. There is a poem I wrote not long ago called The Soliloquy of a Ghost, so that's specifically addressing it. But I think that we each embody our own lives and the lives of those that came before us and parts of the lives that are around us. And when we experience things, we experience fragments of things. So poetry is often looking at those fragments and trying to unearth bits of those fragments. And in the process, undoubtedly, there are ghosts.
Okay. I know that you've spent some of your writing life, maybe most of your writing life, in Australia. Can you talk about what it's like there as a poet as opposed to what your experience here so far?
I'd love to talk about it. How long have you got?
We have a little time.
Yeah. Well, just a bit of context. Most of my life I've been an attorney, and there wasn't much time to write. So as much as writing poetry was a passion, this book, I suppose you can call it recent because it's been out for 5 years. It's the only book I've got. It took me 30 years to write because I wrote when I could. But I was very involved in the poetry scene at home. Friendly Street Poets is an amazing organisation that has published about 70 or 80 books and probably 1,000 poets, has annual anthologies. And so I became very involved in that early on before I knew anything about poetry. I was hooked. I went to a reading and I was just mesmerised by the poets who read, some of whom are still reading 35 years later. And that started me on the journey to writing myself. It took me a number of years before I had the courage to do it, and even longer before I had the courage to read. But in a sense, Pittsburgh, coming to Pittsburgh has helped me a great deal. And that is because I had a very parochial, insular, poetic worldview. I didn't even really know the Australian poetic scene. I knew the South Australian poetic scene, which is one state of South Australia, and I hadn't read much elsewhere around the country. So to come to what I didn't know was, but have found to be, an amazing poetry hub with so much going on, and to initially feel intimidated by that, and then to start reading and finding a place here in the community, which has been wonderful to me, has helped me in any number of ways. And it actually made me start to do something that I'd long wanted to do but hadn't done, and that was to look outwards more, to get involved in a national dialogue in Australia. So I started to do that by becoming a volunteer editor of a national magazine in Australia, and then to attempt to publish elsewhere. I'd been published mainly in Australia and a little bit in Romania, but other than that, I hadn't published elsewhere. So I've been trying to publish a lot in the States, and that's been wonderful. And I've been having sort of conversations with people back in Australia about here. And I'm also trying to forge links between the two poetry communities, because I think that there are tons of possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Yeah, that's kind of a happy story. And I'm glad that you like it here and that it's been good to you, and we're happy to have you. I've seen you out at readings and being very involved, so welcome.
Thank you.
So how about some more poems?
Sure. Holes in the net. There are holes in the net of my father's generation. And as they widen, dimness envelops the stars in my firmament. I have been a much-loved child, they to me, backbone, rock and anchor. I have been nurtured from every quarter, they to me, generous benefactors. What have they not given that was within their power? They have been shield and sword on my account, I to them, an unfinished poem of their dreaming. They are failing now, one by one, old age and illness claiming them. Their eyes are turning inward to other skies. There are holes in the net of my father's generation, and as they widen, I can see in my firmament my own mortality beginning to glow. The switch. It was all the trying of it, and at the same time, the resistance to trying. It was the slow dredging of each letter from the sandbank of words, and the mouth work, tentative, uncertain, wrapping itself into sound. It was the climb up the endless wall of the impenetrable, because someone had promised there were worlds to gaze on from its rim. It was that moment of astonishment, that spreading smile on her face, when she found the switch and flicked it on. Now, this poem has, as its title, a comment by Newt Gingrich during his attempt for the Republican presidential nomination. He said, "We are all fallen." Indeed. We are all fallen. There was childhood, wispy residence of dreams, of imagination, of possibility. A time before standing, before falling, before exile. I fell as we all fall. How many times have I fallen? I fell without wings, sometimes knowing I was falling, sometimes unaware. I fell, tensing my heart for impact, for injuries. I fell into a poverty of grace, into harsh and righteous judgment. I fell and rose again, but never to the same height. I rose again, carrying wistfulness and regret, carrying an endless weight like Sisyphus with his boulder. I rose again because this is a life, imperfect, fallen. I watched others fall, suspending judgment. Falling and falling, watching others fall, I preach no sermons except compassion. I know I will fall again, though not how far, how often. I will fall and rise, fall again, until I can fall no more. Bell hour. And you, my bell jar, my hourglass, more than jar and glass, my bell hour, such curved bellness, so fertile lush, so woman, so blooming almost mother, you toll for me, your belly's toll, you peal, you chime, this is your hour, the future courses through, and you, and me, and three of us.
David, I want to ask you about the idea of falling. It's strange that you said that, because I had written down in front of me what stands and what has fallen, you know, before you got to that poem, because I kept feeling this sense of falling that I couldn't quite get my hands on, but it really comes out strongly in that poem. The idea of us all being not necessarily indicted but implicated in what happens here on planet Earth seems to be also in your work in the form of a sense of compassion. Would you say that's something that drives your work?
I think it does. I think, like many of us who are paying attention to ourselves in our inner lives, I wrestle with my own failings. And hopefully that makes me not judgmental of other people. I don't want to be judgmental of other people. And a lot of that wrestling finds its way into my poems. And it's funny how some words, without necessarily an intention on the part of the poet, take on a significance. Because I wrote, I think, three or four poems with the word fall or falling in it, almost one after the other, although that wasn't intended, and they were quite different poems. They're about different things. One was about trees falling. That word somehow crept in and demanded to be used. You'll see when you read the book that there is a kind of obsession with the horizon, with distance. And that was very much the case for a lot of my earlier work. But this idea of falling, and I talk in some poems specifically of compassion. I have a poem called The Heart Always. And I think I'm not one of these poets who write brilliant intellectual poems. My poems flow very much from the heart. And if there's no heart in my poems, then generally they don't work.
Mm-hmm. So the sense of the intuitive also seems really important.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we have time for some more.
Okay. Cotton. Everything went into this. The needle and thread of our mothers, the thimbles, their dexterous fingers and soothing voices, patching and mending tears in our clothes, our frayed edges, the children we were. They were lavish with their inheritance, the way women are, steeped in love and family, passing it on among themselves through generations, stretching back to Egypt, and before that, past records, past knowledge and memory, perhaps all the way back to Isabel and Ferdinand in 1492, and before that, who knows, perhaps back to Moses at Mount Sinai. We reached for thread and found our ancestors' lines. Some remembered, like your Pepe and Meme, my aunts and uncles, and others never known, yet present in a gesture perhaps, or a tone of voice, or the strength to dream. Everything went into this. The twirled thread, the braid we made, two lines gathered into one, steeped in love and family. And now we look both back and forward. We shine a light upon our ancestors, lowering the braid for tiny fingers to reach and hold and follow. Love's seasons. Who is to say when love might call? It comes when it comes and gives no reasons. It was spring when I should have been in thrall. I would have swooned, light and dazed, through summer's long hot days of light. I would have burned as my love blazed, my fire cupped in her loving sight. Fool that I am, I fell in the fall. I fell for her eyes, her mouth for it all. I fell for the blade of her shoulder. I fell with the crash of a boulder. We lay bare beneath a blanket of leaves, hearts warm with the weft of their weaves, though we knew that winter would come and love's work would all be undone. Windfall. A job fell onto my lap, soiling my pants with bread and butter. Portrait. She posed before him, wearing only her love. On the canvas, he painted himself. The heart always. On matters of forgiveness, I want to say to you, I know. I want to break open the rusty lock on the vault of compassion and say to you with a warm voice, with a hugging you in my arms voice, I know, I know. Autumn days seem suitable for this. The leaves briefly fluttering to the ground, the branches forgiving, even in their looming nakedness. It is becoming easier. Time is jogging through me on untiring legs, tugging at everything in my hands, cleansing me, grudgeless. I can no longer hold on to anything, so what else but to let it go? I forgive always, unseen, unheard, if not always, to be forgiven.
It's the poetry of David Adez, reading from his book Mapping the World and some new work. Thank you so much. That was
Thank
great.
Thank you very much, Jan.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have the work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody, 90.5 FM.